suit. Once again elevated to the sum of meaning of all things December 25th. I presume that had largely to do with my son, Seth. Now nearing 3 years of age, this was our first holiday season where he was able to apply his emerging cognitive abilities towards the wonder of imagination and belief. His 2 Christmases prior were largely spent in astonishing ignorance, such that the strange and sudden appearance of a pine tree in our living room was no more surprising than the existence of a refrigerator over there in the kitchen corner. But 2018 was the Christmas that the pagan Claus resurrected, and with him, Frosty the Snowman, Mickey Mouse on Ice, and the rest of his large commercial army. And man, that guy and his cronies just wreaked havoc on our checkbook and on our floor space, but worse than most seriously of all, he overshadowed the baby born in that manger. The stores, the websites, the stores, the shopping, it all just rushed by and the point was lost. The carols went out of tune. Passages out of context. And just getting to the morning and the tree and the cookies and the unboxing of all that great stuff was all that began to matter. Or so I thought. I mean, sure, it was fun. And yes, I got some great memories on tape. And my son was so alive now and beautiful, and seeing it through his eyes was a gift, it was, but still there was something I just wasn't yet seeing. Something I wasn't feeling. And whatever I was feeling felt misplaced. So much shallow and unnervingly hollow. Earlier this week, some of my friends told me, don't be such a buzzkill. Every minute of it you should enjoy. You'll never get this back. As they age, it just becomes more routine and less magical. And anyway, didn't those kings of yours in that story, in that book, once bring gifts themselves to Jesus? Or were those only lyrics to a song you heard on the radio? Now, have you ever considered why these particular three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, also gave you a little bit of a clue? Why were these gifts brought to baby Jane? A practical explanation harbored in Psychology Today suggests that gold, obviously, was given to help the family with financial security during the early days of the infant's birth. But frankincense and myrrh were also both common treatments used in ancient times. They were administered at the time of birth as healing agents. Myrrh as a sort of morphine-heparin combo to numb Mary's pain and to clot her blood, and frankincense as a sort of Valium-Prozac concoction to ward off her and the child's fresh anxiety that entered her new naked reality. And perhaps you knew that already and have known it for some time, but I didn't. At least not that bit about frankincense and myrrh. And to own the truth, when I got to seminary, I had no real theological understanding of these three gifts either. So one day, I got courage enough to embarrass myself in front of my more aware and pious friends and ask my New Testament professor what these gifts means were all about. His answer was so obvious and simple, but nonetheless elegant. Gold for a king. Obvious is obvious. Frankincense for a priest. For priests employed the incense in their worship and used it at their sacred offerings. And myrrh for a prophet. For myrrh oil was used in the holy anointing of those especially called by God with the gift of the tongue, I think Psalm 45. So Jesus, the preeminent governor of these three offices, prophet, priest, and king, had each materially and symbolically transferred over to him at the horizon of his birth. For in him, the Magi recognized the greatness of his power and the manifestation of and is a symbol calling his later demise. But what if, I thought, what if this wasn't a symbol foreshadowing Jesus' moment on the cross? But what if it was a signpost to the coming destruction of the principalities that would attempt to encircle and kill him, that would themselves be ultimately vanquished when Jesus conquered the grave, leaving behind an empty tomb? Either way, it seems that these Gentile magi knew what was up. For not only did they nail just the right gifts to give, not to mention the exact scar to follow and how precisely to follow it, but when they came before Herod, King Herod, they instantly knew this king was a fraud and refused to bow down before him. Verses 2 to 3. Think about that for a moment. The Magi from some Gentile nothing land to the east traveled to Jerusalem, the very center of power, and in a stunningly defiant act, they heralded in a new uprising that would disrupt the power already in place. And they did it right to its very face, amidst all of its extravagance and royalty and abundance of stuff. And to top it off, they told this pseudo king, this shallow apparition of claimed divinity, that they had come instead to pay homage to a real king, the true Son of God, who is to be made incarnate not in a palace, but in an insignificant blip of a town called Bethlehem, and yet a crying little baby born to a young, fragile girl named Mary, and an ashamed older husband named Joseph. So there would be no pomp, no lavish parties and pre-parties, no priests or scribes there to celebrate. No, this child instead would be surrounded by lowly cattle and their excrement, and would be delivered into a crummy wooden manger where livestock melt and ate their feed. You see, you don't find God where the world has installed him. You find God where the world would never think to look to us. This is what I'll remember then. The hung and the churning. A panoramic place. Red wires and plastic bags hanging from above and to the right. A stiff brace, the dim light. Bottle of water, a cold hand, eagles in a prayer, but mostly her laugh. On New Year's Eve, I went to the hospital. And there, in a room in the middle of a hallway below a pile of covers, I found him, who I hadn't been seeing. When I wasn't feeling, I found him. Fresh off the Christmas season where everything seemed skewed and tilted and the spirit conspicuously absent, I found who I was overlooking right there in that room. With her. With Betsy. Amidst the machinery and love on the wall that makes a room like that a hospital room, they were there. Together. I should have known better. I should have known he'd be there in the margins and in the manger places, and not everywhere else I was so previously consumed, that he was born just for that kind of space. Betsy could barely move, her brace keeping her neck and her head stiff as a board. I held a bottle up. Bottle of water up to her mouth so she could drink for a little. Her right hand at that point was cold and without feeling. She asked me to hold and massage it. I called the nurses, we moved some wires, we then talked about the Eagles making the playoffs. She said, "Best life without friends." And Betsy called herself blessed. Blessed. Having all that matters in this life. Friendship, His presence, and love. I thought, this is what Epiphany feels like. Paul wrote, "Although I am the very least of all the saints, this grace